You know, the world right now is a really unsettled place. And for such a time as this, women play a most important role in history as peacemakers. The goal of Ladies of Liberty Sound Off is to affect the lives of women in an empowering way through discussion of important issues of the day. So, are you ready? The Ladies of Liberty are ready to sound off.
Well, here we are to talk about labels. And I'm not talking about labels that you find in the back of your shirt or on a purse that mean things. And sometimes labels can be good, but labels that I'm talking about, I'm having some difficulty with. I'm doing my best to understand, but I'm feeling as though this is something that's being forced on me and others of a like mind, perhaps. Our world has changed, and with it has come an interest and desire to have sexual orientation be labeled. It used to be a long time ago that when a person was born, you asked if they were going to be a boy or a girl, and that was the only option. And now we have different labels for people according to their beliefs and understandings and identity. And I'm struggling with this, coming from where I come from, Christian background, personal relationship with Christ. I can say I identify as a woman because I am a woman, and I'm finding it difficult to understand why we need to have so many different labels for so many different styles of identity. I believe that this is part of something that is tearing apart. Sounds dramatic, but the breakup of society, bring in some immorality, confusion for people, and difficulties that we didn't used to have. And then we're told we have to be tolerant. We have to have these changes. We have to accept. And in that process, do away with what used to be and what we would consider to be the norm, which for me defies or flies in the face of some reality. And I know there are always exceptions to things. And I'm not sure we want to get into the exceptions of a person being born with unidentifiable genitalia, but for the general purpose, these labels are being attached to people that want to identify as something other than how they were created, if that makes sense. I don't know what to do with this, and I don't quite know how to fit in society anymore, and feel like if I call someone a she, if I call a female a she, a male-looking person a he, and I'm corrected, of course I will be respectful, but it's reaching a point where I just don't know anymore. I can look at a person and I just don't know. And I'm lost. Can anybody help?
Well, I don't know if I can help. I'm as lost as you are, Becky. And you know, when I look at all of the names now that weren't there when we were younger, I mean, we could really, there's so many. So I'm gonna name some just to get some out here. So we have gender nonconforming, which is someone whose gender identity and or their gender expression does not conform to the cultural or social expectations of gender. Okay, and kind of that's the same thing as non-binary. So that can be an umbrella term. Then you have agender, someone who has little or no personal connection with gender. I don't know how that could happen. Then you have bigender, someone who identifies with both male and female genders, or even a third gender. And I'm not sure what that third gender would be. gender fluid, someone whose gender identity varies over time. Gender queer or third gender, someone whose gender identity or expression falls between or outside of male and female. Again, I'm not sure what that means. Intergender, someone whose identity is between genders or a combination of gender identities and expressions. Pangender, someone whose identity is comprised of all or many gender identities and expressions. The list goes on, ladies. And I do find it, as you do, Becky, very, very confusing, because I'm with you. I mean, in the Bible, it says that God created man and then he created woman. And that's really all that was addressed in the Bible, is men and women. And all men and women throughout history, are all children born, all babies born, have a sexual identity, except for, as you said, those people that are have a specific, I don't know what the word, I don't know if the word would be mutation or whatever the word is, that change that you can't tell, or they have both sexes, both genitalia. I mean, that happens in life. It's not any different than if somebody is born maybe without an arm, or, you know, has some other, a cleft palate, has some other anomaly that happens to them when they're in the womb. Okay, but now we are expected to know all of these terms, and we're expected to address people the way that they choose to be addressed. And then we can have a whole conversation, which I'd love to do, about, you know, which restrooms they use and all those things. But this is all really confusing. And I am just not sure why somehow in life we gave permission to people, because they're demanding it, of using all these terms, when I'm not sure that all of these things exist in nature as much as they exist in the psyche of people that choose to do this. I know I'm going to get in trouble for saying that, and it's hard to explain. I have at my office, at my work, I get emails now from people who in their email signature lines specify what, you know, so they say their name, like Mary Jane, and then next to it in parentheses, it will say she/her. So that's how she wants to be referred to. I mean, is that what we have to do now with everybody, that we have to remember what everybody's particular title is in this way in life? And why can people's sexuality not be private to them? Why do we all have to pander to it? I don't ask anybody to say, hello, Linda, she, her, you know, I don't know. My sexuality and everybody whose sexuality around me is their business, in my opinion. Judy, what do you think?
No, my gosh. I have so many, so many thoughts. My nature is to, it horrifies me if I offend somebody. Okay. My nature is always to make you feel loved, accepted, I don't want you to ever feel judged by me. I want you to feel loved. Okay. And when there's a miscommunication and I offend you, I literally get sick to my stomach. Okay. So that's just my personality. And to think now in our society, there are so many rules there's so many rules of how I'm supposed to address you, how I'm, if I'm going to speak to you, I have to understand now that you, whatever your gender is, I have to understand what that is. And then if you're heterosexual or if you're bisexual, or if you are homosexual, what difference does it make who you have sex with? I don't want to know. I don't care, right? Why does that matter to me? And yet, in my own experience, I have a niece that has decided that, so she, you know, I say she, but what is the correct pronoun for a person that does, is it binary, that they don't want to be identified as either a she or a he? So my niece has switched, I keep saying her, it's hard for me, right? Because I've known her since birth, right? And now I'm probably offending the crap out of her if she listened, right?
Well, so what is the pronoun? What would, right, the pronoun be?
Non-binary.
What would the pronoun, non-binary? So I have to say non-binary every time I address the non-binary person instead of saying she. I don't know. Yeah. I got to look that one up. But I went to the wedding. I went to my other niece's wedding, and all of us, you know, all of the people that grew up as a boy or a girl, right, from the different generations, they were actually straying away from this person. When I decided, okay, I'm gonna go move in and give my niece a hug and embrace my niece's partner. And then I sat down with them and I said, so, okay, you got to help me, because I don't know what I don't know. And I don't understand, because this has not been in my world. It's not been in my atmosphere. And I haven't had to maneuver through this, you know, a world like this. And I said, so the first thing I said was, so will you please forgive me if I am about to offend you, because I'm just learning right now. Okay. Cause I love you very much. I don't want to offend you. I want you to feel comfortable with your auntie. Right. And by the way, am I an auntie or an uncle, or is there a new word for me if I'm, I don't know. Anyway. So but we laughed and we embraced, and I'm still confused. Okay. I'm still very confused. And when I look at the whole situation, not just with my niece, but with our world in general, I think about Romans 1:18, and it states, when a nation forsakes God, it loses its moral compass and loses its capacity to be outraged by sin. So in essence, what happens is, what was wrong is right. You know, what was known and accepted as wrong in our culture and in our society and how we live is now accepted as right and correct and embraced. And what was considered right and good is now considered horrible and sin. And it's a confusion that I believe is happening everywhere, and it's permeating our whole world. To look at it, it's everywhere. It's not just with what sex we are, or what sex we claim we are, or who we have sex with. It's everything from how much, you know, how, if we're good stewards with our money as a nation, who we care for, who our partners are, what does it mean to be committed? Marriage is considered, is supposed to be a sacrament. You take your vows, and they're thrown out the window, and now everybody and anybody, you can marry anything. You can marry anybody, whether they're your same sex or not. Pretty soon, you'll be able to marry your dog, I think. And I'm sure I'm offending everybody, but what we're looking at is that here it is, Romans 1, 24, 26, and 28. God giving a society over and letting them go to the uninterrupted cause and effect of such as of sinful choices. And this is called the wrath of abandonment. And what I believe is that God is just giving us over to ourselves. He has stopped trying to keep us from making these mistakes. He's saying, you know, you have fought me for so long. This is what you want. And he's giving us over to ourselves. So I'm sure that we're going to get lots and lots of letters and calls, and I'm sure that I'm offending people, but I feel like this world is going crazy.
You are the most accepting and loving person. And what you said is really true. And I think that that's exactly how we all think. And I think that's where our discomfort and confusion comes in, because in my own family as well, in my extended family, there are people that are not heterosexual. Okay. I don't see them any differently, and I don't want to see them any differently. So what I would like is people can live however they choose to live their life, but I don't want to put on me to have to know what their proper label should be. And I don't want to know what their sexual inclinations or preferences are, just like I don't care for them to know mine. And I want to judge people based on their behavior and not their sexuality. And that's what I see. So that's why I think that this is disturbing, because I just don't even want to know the answer, and I don't want to ask the question. I just want to accept people and work with them and be their neighbors and be their friends, regardless of any of that. It doesn't matter. But what matters is how they treat people and how their actions and their words, those are the things that matter. So why are we being, to Becky's first question, which I am going to go back to Becky on, why are we being forced to have this issue that we have to address people in classrooms and in life and in emails that has to do with their sexuality instead of them as, you know, just a human being?
You know, Judy, I'm going to comment on your Romans 1, 24 through 28. And if I would love to have a button that I could press for standing ovation sound, because that is perfect. That is the perfect response for this moment and in this topic. I'm applauding like crazy. Thank you for interjecting that. That also within there, repeatedly the words God gave them over to, and God gave them over to, and God gave them over in. Our human nature wants what we want when we want it. And I mean, that's how it started. That's how the fall started. We wanted to become God. Adam and Eve, it's like, you know what? I want this. This sounds great. Who tempted them? This is going to sound like I'm standing in a pulpit, and I'm not going to apologize for it, but Satan's number one goal is to break up families. And we've talked about this so many times. This is another tool that he's using. Add confusion. Add confusion in a person's own mind. And Linda, when you said nature versus psyche and how much of that is involved, it is really involved. Yes, there are situations where through whatever, in the way God created an individual, they may be born without specific, gender-specific body parts. I don't understand, and I can't even fathom how that would be handled. However, I believe strongly the majority of what's happening in society is the psyche part. And I have a cousin who has decided that he would identify as a female. And it's just so, it's frightening. It's absolutely frightening to see this person. It is very evident to me that there are lots of other psychological problems there. This person is very manly. I mean, really manly. And so it's kind of scary as he dresses as a female. But society is forcing us to accept and be tolerant. I suppose in the name of keeping peace, it's the wrong kind of peace. Christians are being quiet about all of this. And because Christians are being condemned, and it's giving the appearance Christians are being hated on if we speak the truth. And when we speak the truth in love, as my mother has always, always told me, when you speak the truth, you speak it in love. I am not to judge. We cannot judge. Only God judges. But if you speak the truth, the haters are automatically going to say, oh, because you're one of those Bible beaters, you're a Christian, and you just hate. You just have to hate on someone. They don't think the way that you think. And you know what? I can't change a person's heart. I can only provide and what God says. And Romans 1, 24 and 28 says a lot about this. Now, I through all of this, we will offend people, Judy. It's just going to happen. Yeah. And it is hard. I don't want to offend people either. But in conversations with my college-age daughter, she tells me the majority of her friends who are in the theater department at her school all have those labels. And I remember her last year, we had that conversation where she said, Mom, you can't just say he or she if you don't know that's how they're going to be. So she was really indoctrinated and, you know, brainwashed. I'll just say it. You have to say he, she, them. And Linda, like you mentioned, the emails, those emails, I've seen them. I've received a couple. Any of her emails have that at the bottom. Whoever signs it, he/she/them/they. And I literally can't keep up. I can't, I will offend simply because I can't keep up and I don't know.
But why should we? Why should we have to keep up? Because less than something like a percent, I don't know the figures, but it's a very small amount. Even if it was 5% of the population that fit into these categories, why does the other 95% have to change their life in order to appease people? And it's not just this issue. It's not just sexual labels. It's all kinds of labels, right? You know, that we call each other racist and mm-hmm. homophobic and xenophobic. And I can't even think of all the phobics we call each other, but I'm tired of labels. I just want to be a person, and I want everybody else to be a person. And, you know, if they have some particular preference that's really, really, really important to them, although I can't figure out why they would, but if they do, they can tell me that and I'll respect that. But I can't be expected, nor can any of us be expected, to live our busy lives every day and know what everybody's pronouns are. That just makes no sense to me. I just think that we should all be people. I mean, I don't go around calling somebody, you know, Judy the Republican or Becky the Democrat, or, you know, I mean, I don't call them all the different things you think that we could title people. I just don't think that I want to, I don't want to view somebody through the prism of their sexuality. I just want to view them as a human being, one of God's children, a friend, a neighbor, whatever they are, a business relation. And I don't want to know about your sexual preferences.
You're absolutely right, Linda. But look at the power that the small voice is having. Because
we're shamed. Because they shame us. And right. We accept it.
Yes, but we shouldn't. I mean, in my opinion, we don't have to. We shouldn't have to. And yet, we're afraid to offend.
Absolutely. I mean, when you look at, everybody is, and like I said, I'm afraid to offend. It's in my nature, okay? But I can't help but offend people because how do I have any idea unless they wear a tag identifying how they want me to address them.
But I think we have to reach a point where we have to be true to God.
That's it. I mean, that's the bottom line right there.
Are we going to offend God by keeping quiet? Or are we going to that person?
Mm-hmm. And I mean, there's it's hilarious. Brian and I were driving the other day and there was a big truck in front of us, a Raptor, and it had a bumper sticker that said, "Don't worry, I identify as a Prius." Sorry. So we were laughing, but it's funny, but it's not funny. I mean, this is just what the Bible is telling us that, God has given us over to ourselves, and it's almost like the whole world is going haywire, going in totally in the opposite direction. I look at what's happening in Loudoun County, and this is exactly what many parents were afraid of, that some kid, male child would identify as a female and then be allowed to, use the girl's bathroom, and he goes in there and he rapes a girl. Mm. Okay. So now our children aren't safe. They're not safe, right? Because this loophole now can be used by predators to attack our children or to attack anybody, right? So you have these spaces that predators can use. And then because of politics, they cover up the whole thing, right? And they lie. The school board lied at the meeting saying that nothing of this occurred. Nothing like this actually occurred when it did. And so where does it end? The question is because whose rights trump each other, right? Whose rights win out?
Well, that's the question. Right. That is the question. Mm-hmm. Is it the person? Is it that minority? And this mm-hmm. is what they're doing. Is it that minority that wants to use the girls' restroom? Or is it the majority who live, that are identify as boys and girls, men and women? Do those people? I mean, to my mind, you have to go with what is best for the majority, not what is best for the minority. And that's just common sense. And we seem to have lost a lot of that along this route. And it's because we are shamed into making these decisions. And then we are called names, labeled, as Becky puts it, we're labeled as, having all of these phobic things. And that's not the case at all. Just go back to that. I want to live my life the way I'm supposed to live it. You live your life the way that you're supposed to live it, but don't infringe on everybody else's life to make yours oh so much more important than mine and everybody else's. It just can't be that way. It's not sustainable, and it's not even common sense. And I agree with you both. We have gone kind of crazy at this point in time, and we need to get a handle on it, and we need to do the right things in life, and just treat each other as we should be treated. The what was always taught to me was treat others as you'd like to be treated. And it's very simple. And we just go back to those simple things. I think we'll be fine. And we'll be right back.
It was a vision that gave birth to a unique multimedia platform that would combine classic talk radio, great writers, and memorable podcasts and videos. AmericaOutloud.com is a conservative leader in a field that is predominantly run by far-left progressive globalists. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Let's get real, let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio. This is the McCullough Report. Are you tired of being tired? Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cells REM Sleep Supplement. These are pill-free supplements in a gel pack. They're so easy to take before you go to bed. I'm so tired during the day now, working so hard, but restless at the same time. I'm going to take a Healthy Cell before sleep tonight so I can restore my REM sleep and wake up refreshed. Now go to HealthyCell.com, use the code OUTLOUD, all capital letters, OUTLOUD, for a 20% off your first order of any product. Let's get real, let's get loud on America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Each of us is born with 30 trillion cells that make us. These cells determine how we feel, perform, sleep, focus, and how long we live. And to live our best life, all we have to do is feed our cells. But most food and supplements don't reach our cells, keeping us from reaching our full potential. Make every cell count with Healthy Cell. Founded with a mission to empower people to take control of their own health at the most fundamental level, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, world-renowned cell researcher and medical doctor, created supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. And that's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Don't miss an episode of the Ladies of Liberty Sound Off. Subscribe to the podcast. And for the latest news and inspiration, join us back at AmericaOutloud.com.
Hey, welcome back to Ladies of Liberty Sound Off. I'm Judy Moran, and I'm here with two of my besties. And I'm so excited because one of my long-lost besties, Becky Kominen, is back. Welcome back, Becky.
Thank you.
She is, oh my gosh, I love Becky's brain. And her voice is smooth as silk, since she does own her own business as a voice talent. But I'm just so excited and happy that you're back with us, Becky. And then I absolutely love my Linda Martinelli. She is the driving force behind Ladies of Liberty Sound Off. She's an amazing woman. She has her own company business as well as another show she does with her husband, Talking While Married. Just two of my favorite women. And we're going to chat today about one of our most favorite subjects, which is marriage, right? Like from the Princess
Bride. I got it.
Right.
And we're all married.
Yes, we're all married.
Right. We're all married. And I think all of us have been married for quite a long time. How long have you been married, Becky?
26 years.
And how about you, Linda?
16.
That's a while. I've been in it for 33 years now. And what Becky shared with us earlier is that there's a trend right now of people who are in their 50s, people who have been married for, can you tell me, Becky, what's the trend?
That at 25 years of marriage, which typically is for those in their 50s, that the marriages are falling apart at that 25th anniversary.
I can see
that. Was there an article about that that talked about that?
You know, there was. I don't have it pulled up at the moment, but it's a disturbing trend that has been happening for a number of years. And I, from personal experience with a friend, I know it's been going on for a long time. And it seems to be, it used to be what I used to read was 7 years, you know, the 7-year itch. But
right,
something happens at the 25 mark after the kids have left the nest.
I'm looking at, this is interesting, why marriages fail after 25 years from Psych Central. And they're saying, after all, surely this couple has been through just about everything and survived it, or have they? They're saying it is precisely when a lack of distractions from career, kids, schools, and community subsides that the underlying long-term issues rise to the surface. The defense mechanism of denial no longer works, they're saying. Instead, what is revealed is prolonged hurt, deep-seated resentment, and a lack of forgiveness. Virtually no real communication and zero intimacy. Says a marriage falling apart after such a long duration isn't about a lack of commitment. Instead, the dedication to staying together is what allowed the marriage to last as long as it did. Yet society vilifies the desolation. Instead of understanding and compassion for the long suffering, insensitive remarks are made about the character of those who decide to divorce. But it's not about the character. I think they're wrong in that. But I do think, I can see it happening, you know, after all the distractions and all the everything leaves, right? So these couples, the husband typically retires, or the wife, and now they're home together 24/7. And I have to say, I adore my husband. I love him. I think he's hysterical. I think he is kind and generous, and he's a man of character, and I think he still smells really good, but I really don't want him home 24 hours a day, okay, with me. You know what I'm saying? I have developed my own world. I have developed my own life apart from him. Brian, in our marriage, one of us at any given time would travel a lot, and the other spouse would be, conducting their world, living in their world by themselves, and the other would visit, right? Pretty much. And we've developed our whole relationship that way. So for instance, like when COVID came, I was so excited that my husband could still go to the office because I have my own routines without my precious husband, right? And I kind of like it. So if he was home 24/7 and needed me, was real needy, I think that would be a problem. What do you guys think?
Well, some of the things that you talked about, I just found in an article through AARP, which, mm-hmm. yes, I'm old enough to receive this information and read it responsibly. They list.
That's hilarious.
They list.
Okay, go ahead.
Some things that you did mention, the issues such as infidelity, they actually list that as the first, money issues and lack of communication and empty nest, which I mentioned at the beginning, and the unresolved issues of the past. I tend to think the empty nest thing and the unresolved issues of the past go hand in hand. Because if you had issues, let's say at the beginning of when you had your babies and started your young family, those issues can tend to get set aside while you are parenting, which involves so much over so many years that when the empty nest syndrome hits, you're together again, and some of those don't want to say issues, just they start surfacing again, because you start realizing it's just the two of you, and then you start remembering some things you had issues with, and there might be a few sparks that ignite those memories. And you're, I have to say, sometimes you're just exhausted after 25 years of dealing with this and that and that and this and this and that. And a lot of people just say, I'm done. I have just put so much energy into this. And this issue that I was dealing with 25 years ago, mentally, and unfortunately, it's like they erase all the good years that they had with the kids and go right back to that problem. And that problem now seems very current, whereas it was set aside for 25 years. And now all of a sudden it's a problem again. And they decide, you know what? I've just been through all of this and I'm done. I'm just done. I need to go find somebody I'm not going to have issues with.
Good luck with that, huh?
Yeah, it doesn't
yeah,
happen.
Good luck with that.
It doesn't happen. But in your moment of desperation, you think it might. Remember, the grass is always greener?
Yes, yes. I think that relationships, the biggest thing is we need good communication throughout a marriage, not just after 25 years, but there has to be good communication. I know that, you know, the idea should be when the kids move out, you're like having a party, you know, because now you get to be by yourselves and you get to do things that you want to do. And that's kind of how I feel. But also, you know, more than half of very happy couples that say that they're very happy, say that God is at the center of their relationship. And I think that that's an important criteria that we are missing so much in today's world, that we've forgotten about that. And I also think that a lot of people are divorcing at that time of age because in the past it wasn't acceptable. So people just stayed. Now it's acceptable. So they go ahead and do it. And we're kind of in a throwaway disposable society where people in your lives are disposable, just like your garbage, you know, so just get rid of it and change to something new. Marriage takes work. And I'm not saying you cannot be with the wrong person. If you're with the wrong person, then you need to go and have a happy life. That's number one. But something attracted you to that person in the first place. And if people would communicate well in their relationship, all through their relationship, I don't think that they'll have that situation at 25 years, because it, you know, familiarity breeds contempt, right? And who are you most familiar with in your life, except for your spouse? You know, every single one of their foibles, you know, you have, I remember Michelle Obama saying something about, you know, everybody's praising Barack Obama at one time. And she says something about, you know, that he still throws his underwear on the floor or something, you know, and okay, right. because the wife knows that. And none of us is perfect. And so we need to accept that. But I know with me, if my husband or I don't agree with something that the other is doing, even if it's throwing clothes on the floor, you know, we are going to say that and we're going to talk it out and we're not going to fight about it. And that's not to say that we don't have fights, but we don't let our fights last. I think the worst thing in a marriage ever is to not talk about things and let it fester. And then it becomes way bigger than what it ever was or should have been. That's the worst thing. People that don't talk about it and don't communicate, or just be quiet and go, you know, sleep on the couch or something, I think is the absolute worst thing. So, I mean, nobody teaches us all these things before we get married. You know, there's no real learning about how to be a spouse. It's not that one person gives 50% and not that one person gives the other 50%. It's that both people give 100%. And I promise everyone that if you, as your own person, and I'd love to know if you agree with me, ladies, if you give 100% to the other person, you're going to get it back. It's not about me expecting what my husband's going to give me. It's about what I can give him. And I promise that I get it back, you know, tenfold, because that's how life works. When you give love, you get love.
I agree with you. I think, you need to be 100% responsible for your relationship and your marriage. That is the most important. That, and obviously having a what we consider Christ-centered marriage, that you are in it. It's the three of you. It's God, it's your husband and yourself. And which makes you stay in it when you want to flee, when you are not being quote unquote fulfilled, or you think somebody else is going to love you more. But I'm here to tell you that no matter where you go, there you are. Okay. And you're going to drag all your problems and all your crap is going to come with you. It may look different, but it isn't different. The only way you're going to have a healthy, happy relationship is if you create it. If you sit there and wait for your spouse to do it, it's just not going to happen. I truly believe that it's up to me to have a really good marriage. Now, if my spouse is cheating on me, that's non-negotiable. And even God and the Bible states that, right? That's a reason for divorce, as well as if they are physically or mentally abusing you. That's reason for divorce. But other than those, you know, those two things, you chose this person. You took a vow. And marriage still is a sacrament. It's not just a legal binding contract. And I think that our society, I think it goes back to, again, why are we seeing so many long-standing marriages fall apart? Well, it's because our culture says it's good and right and healthy to do that. So again, what is wrong has become right. And again, I feel that God is giving us over to ourselves. You know, go ahead, make your own rules. You know, satisfy your desires. Let your physical wants drive your world. And when you do that, you just will have nothing but pain. It just causes pain. I look at, you know, Brian and I were in the process of buying a new house here in Arizona, and we were talking about the loan, okay? And the bank came back and said that we would get a better rate if I wasn't on the loan. And I'm like, what the heck? My credit's better than his, okay? You know, why? Why is that? And what does that mean then? And our bank said, well, you'll still be on the title, but you're not going to be on the loan. And then I started to talk about, well, what happens if something happens to Brian? Okay. I need to, as a woman, I need to establish my own credit history apart from him. Because if something happens, and you know, Brian made a comment, he's like, oh, you'd probably get married again. And I said, what? I said, I am never doing this again. I said, I love you, but I'm not doing this again. I said, right. I'm never leaving you. I am happy in my marriage, but I'm not doing this again. Right.
So, you don't want to have to retrain somebody new.
Exactly. Right. But I think that the bottom line is, you know, our culture says, concentrate on yourself. You know, what are all the trend words? Self-care and take care of yourself. And what do I deserve? And what makes me happy? It's all about me, 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 me in our society. When I look at my marriage to my husband is not just about me. It's about our children and our grandchildren and the legacy that we're going to leave behind. And what are we teaching our children and our grandchildren about relationships? Are we teaching them to, hey, just step out if you're not feeling it, right? I'm committed. I think we should stay committed. I do.
You know, Judy, you hit a good point there. What our family sees with regard to our marriages, a long time ago, way back when marriages stayed together for good or bad, the next generation saw how hard they worked. They saw what it took to make a good marriage work and to make a marriage work. Not all marriages have to be Cinderella and sunshine and flowers, but you can have a good marriage without it being Hollywood. But that younger generation saw what it took to make a marriage work. And now with the divorce rate being over 50%, that's being witnessed less and less and less. And so our example is going away. If you have people who are not believing in God, you have fewer Christ-centered marriages, and that is the anchor that you need in a marriage. But if you don't believe in God and you don't believe in the Bible, you're left with the me. And you're so right. It is completely a me generation. And the next, with every new generation that's coming up, I'm seeing that be stronger and stronger and stronger. Look at the Unitarian Church. That's what that's all about. And they've called it a church about me. It's all about what's happening now. Me.
Right.
So, but it's another, I'm going to keep going back to this. It's another tool that Satan uses is the lies and the whispers that happen. I want to be happy. This isn't fun anymore. I want something more. He looks so much better than what I have in my husband. Look at that guy. He's got hair. Look at this person. You know, they're lies. And if you don't stay in the word, and if you don't have that Christ-centered, and even sometimes when you do, there are Christian marriages that fall apart. But there's also possibly a lot of reasons for that. And Christian marriage doesn't necessarily mean you have 100% guarantee of having a marriage that's going to last for 60, 70 years. But it is Christ-centered that gives you what the world cannot give you. And that is the me and the disposable. It's like, you know what? It's not working. I'll just get a new one. And you're right, Judy, with having, being, I don't want to say being prepared, but it is important for both couples to give 100% and for the woman to have her name on the mortgage as well, because life happens. Life does happen. And that's not to say that you're setting aside some extra cash in case Brian decides to take off. That's not what you're doing.
No, I'm not.
It is just, that part is just being common sense. And that's, I applaud that. That's just smart. But leaving, I would love to see marriages leave that example. We are super blessed with having my nieces and nephews relatively close by, except for one that's in Germany. And they're witnessing their parents and my parents, who have been married 62 years, they've been through hell and back in their marriage and came within a blink of being divorced at one point. Long story. I'm going to write a book. You'll read it when they're dead. But they have set such an amazing example for marriage that when I go through rocky periods with my God of Thunder, I look back at that and I say, you know what? What's important? What is important? How much of my consternation is about me and what I want? I need to be giving. And you mentioned that again, giving. And Linda, you mentioned giving. That's not being taught in society. It's all about me. And I think that's where the biggest rub right now is happening.
I think you're right that is what's happening. And it's all about a very selfish world we're living in now, very self-centered world. People care about what they want and not so much what somebody else wants. But again, I have to say that the lesson that is missed is that when you give, you receive 10 times over. And I have found that to be true 1,000 times in life. You just do. Are there times when something bad happens? Judy and I were having a personal discussion about one the other day where I felt bad because I'd been very good to somebody and they kind of burned me. But it's not my place in life to give, you know, retribution or payback. It's just, it was my place to do the right thing. And that's what I did. And I will find my payback somewhere in life, and that person will find their payback in life. Marriage is a sacrament, a contract, an agreement between two people. It takes work. It takes effort. And it takes unselfishness on the part of each party. And like I said, to give 100% each, and it will work. Is every minute in marriage happy? No. Sometimes you don't like your spouse. I don't think either of you can tell me that at times you don't even like your spouse. I know that happens with me, but I love him. And we get through that very quickly. And I'm sure he feels the same about me. If I do something that he doesn't like, or, you know, that's just life. Okay. We feel the same way with our relatives and our kids and all those things. So kind of, we need to grow up and put our big girl and boy pants on and realize that life is not all flowers and sunshine all the time. And it does take an effort, and it's not all about me, but it's all about, I think, those people in your life that you love, and then the me will work itself out.
It's so true. You just have to remember that you took a vow, and it is up to you to grow together. You're going to have seasons of your marriage. And just like if you look at your very longest, truest, best friendships, you know, when I look at my friendship with my Mary Beth, she's been my best friend since third grade. Okay. Mm-hmm. Have we been stuck like glue ever since third grade? No. Have we had different seasons of our friendship where we're experiencing, you know, kids that grew up and my kids were little, we're still best friends. And it always comes back. And so just wait, I tell people, just wait long enough, just wait it out. It'll come back.
Well, ladies, that's a wrap. One more step for womankind.